Hi, it's Phil. I want to tell you about Heat and Cool. Heat and Cool specializes in bringing you the best, most efficient air conditioning, heating, and ventilation systems on the planet at the best prices possible. Unlike other companies, Heat and Cool assists you and your technician with any technical support questions you may have during your installation or with servicing your system before and after your purchase. You order online. It's remarkable how this works. I want you to check it out. Orders ship free to the U.S. continental states. Most orders ship the same day. And Heat and Cool offers something that you don't see in the heating and cooling industry, a hassle-free 365-day return on all purchases. Click on the Heat and Cool button on the sponsor page on our website at philhewlettandfriends.com and get yourself a new system. Cool that sweaty house off, will you? Heat and Cool. Welcome back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Gonzo Gregg is here. Dale Lopes is here. And so are you. And joining us now is a teacher of landscape history and horticulture at the New York Botanical Garden, where she studied landscape design. She also consults for public gardens and private clients. Her latest book is called All the President's Gardens. Marta McDowell, welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
Oh, glad to have you. We've heard about presidents holding talks or giving speeches in the White House Rose Garden, but during the current administration, we know about the First Lady's Vegetable Garden. So what exactly are we talking about when referencing the White House gardens?
Well, we're talking about 18 acres that surround the White House. And it's a really interesting site because it combines both a public function and a private home.
18 acres, I mean, that's hard to imagine. It sounds like, when you think about the White House, or if you've driven past it there on Pennsylvania, most of the grounds are green and grassy and decades-old trees, right?
That's right. So there's a big central view from the south out to the Washington Monument, and that's basically all grass. And that has to stay open per the plan that was done way back in the 1930s. By Frederick Law Olmsted Jr. And so the amount of space for other gardens is fairly limited.
And when you say other gardens, which other gardens do we have as of today?
Well, there's the Rose Garden right outside the West Wing. Outside the East Wing, there's the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden, sometimes called the First Lady's Garden. Then there is a Children's Garden. And, as you mentioned, the Obama Vegetable Garden, there's a pollinator bed. And so there are some little garden spaces around the edges.
A pollinator bed. What exactly is that for those of us who are not horticulturally inclined?
Good point. Well, it's a nice planting area that is full of mostly flowering plants that grow in the Washington, D.C. area to help the local pollinators. So this is part of planting native plants to help the butterflies and bees.
Do they have one of those areas where they've got the beehives in those white boxes?
They do. They have to strap them down because it's also where the helicopter lands.
Oh, I'm sure the bees love that.
Yeah, I guess they seem to be producing a lot of honey, so it doesn't seem to bother them.
Yeah. Is the Rose Garden, is that area officially designated for certain types of presidential activities like speeches or diplomatic meetings?
Well, John F. Kennedy had it designed, I think, almost like a theater. You know, he wanted a place where he could have a news conference or he could honor a person or group of people and have a beautiful area where people could also be seen. So it has big wide steps, and you see the presidential podium there. So that was put in the 1960s. It's a garden that's had really good longevity in terms of the White House overall history.
Didn't President Nixon's daughter, Tricia, get married in that Rose Garden?
That's right. And the wedding was televised. Some of your listeners may remember that. So it was almost like a royal wedding. And the flowers were beautiful. It was a lovely event, so my fond memories of that.
Now, the Rose Garden does precede the Kennedy administration, does it not?
Oh, it does. So there have been Rose Gardens on that side of the White House, you know, almost since the beginning of the 20th century. So that was traditional that that be a space for rose gardens. But by the time the Kennedys moved in, I think it was looking a little shabby. And so as Jacqueline Kennedy worked on the inside of the house, John Kennedy got a family friend, Rachel Lambert Mellon, to redesign the space that we now all refer to as the Rose Garden. But he kept a hand in the design. He was involved in it from that sense.
Yeah. Anything unusual ever happened there? Like maybe, I don't know, squirrels or raccoons attack?
Well, actually, quite a number of things. When it was going in, when they were digging up, excavating, they found a lot of interesting things. So, you know, shards from the old greenhouse flower pots and horseshoes from the Civil War era. But they also accidentally cut through the, like, national security phone line.
Oh.
And they triggered an atomic alert. Very brief, but there you go.
Yeah, call before you dig.
Yeah, exactly. But they do fight pests just like any other gardener. So, you know, squirrels are always a problem because they want to dig up the tulip bulbs.
Oh.
So one of the gardeners had a very clever idea. He would have a big basket of peanuts, of Georgia peanuts, attached to another tree sort of outside the rose garden to kind of lure the squirrels off.
Oh, speaking of peanuts, President Carter, Jimmy Carter, was a peanut farmer, and many presidents before him were farmers. Did he plant peanuts in the White House garden?
As far as I know, he did not plant peanuts. He did bring trees from planes and planted them at the White House. He also took sort of tree saplings back to planes from the White House. So he was very interested in the trees, and in fact, there are lovely sort of metal labels with the tree names on them and who planted them, and those were put up during his administration as well. He also put in a treehouse for his daughter, Amy.
Oh, a treehouse. I remember that. Didn't she? She used to spend the night in that, didn't she?
That's right. See, it would be nice to be invited. You know, if you were one of Amy Carter's friends, you might be invited for a sleepover out in the treehouse.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get into much trouble.
I forgot about that. Yeah, because the Secret Service is everywhere, aren't they?
That's right, and they would supervise.
Now, when a new first family takes residence, are they allowed to just plow over whatever they want and plant whatever they want? Like, if I were president, I might put in a White House skate park.
No, there is an overall plan, and that has to be adhered to. And then there's also something called the Fine Arts Commission that reviews changes that are proposed both inside the White House and outside, because it is a national park. So, again, it's the president's home, and the president and his family or her family are given latitude to make some changes. But it's also, you know, it belongs to all of us. It's our first garden.
Mrs. Obama's veggie garden, will that remain as a permanent feature?
That will depend on the next administration.
Oh, and then all of a sudden, vegetables become a political football.
Which is a shame, because plants know nothing about politics.
As far as we know. Yes. The book is called All the President's Gardens. It's available in the store on our website. Marta McDowell, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Phil.
That was fun.
My vegetables will be huge. I have the best vegetables.
Can you imagine? No, think about it for a second. I didn't ask her. Oh, I should have asked her. Like, just project
grow
ahead.
Hamburgers?
A Hillary Clinton garden versus a Donald Trump garden. You know? Trump's veggies will be taller, for sure, right?
Just thinking in a few years, hopefully a few years, we'll be able to plant some pot plants out there.
Oh. That'd be a first, huh? Wouldn't that be a first? No, you know what? It's already happened. I'm sure hemp was grown on the White House grounds back
probably,
in the day.
Probably, yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean, wasn't Thomas Jefferson was a hemp farmer, wasn't he?
I think so.
That's
right.
What he was planting out there. Well, see, other people were planting stuff for him. All right, a lot of stuff coming up, including the head distiller at Hangar One Vodka, because they're making vodka out of San Francisco fog.
I don't care what you make out of it. Just make it from. Just get it in me.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, something else that you make is you make things happen in your bed. And if you don't have the Droma bed yet, it's because you don't know about it. And I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now, and it is new. I know it's new to your thinking about beds. This is a state-of-the-art, ultra-comfortable, eco-friendly memory foam mattress. It's better than all the other ones for a lot of different reasons. There's unparalleled quality on this. It's significantly more affordable than other high-quality beds found in traditional mattress stores. You find this one online. The Droma bed is 100% sourced and manufactured here in the U.S., and you can't beat this. If you buy a Droma bed today, you can use it for 200 nights, and on night 199, say, you know what, honey, why don't we return it? There's a hassle-free, risk-free 200-night trial. And they'll ship this to you for free if you live in the 48 contiguous states. How do you get one? And $75 off with a special exclusive offer code. You go to the sponsor page at philhewlettandfriends.com and click on the picture of the happy couple sitting in the bed. They can't leave. They sit there all day long. They're so comfy. Droma bed. Dream on one. All right. Hi, it's Phil. Dale and Gonzo are here. And Gonz, I got to ask you. Are you a reader? Do you sit up at night reading books?
Not generally. Reading is for losers.
Is it?
for geeks.
That means you're alone at home reading a book.
Well, what happens to our brains when we're reading? Probably good stuff, right?
I saw this thing and I wanted to share it with everyone. Reading is clearly it's like a uniquely human thing.
Yeah.
And it's relatively recent in our evolution. And scientists have been arguing for a long time about how we have this ability. And what I found most interesting about this study was because they argue about what part of the brain, you know, does the reading and how do our brains recognize words when we see them, you know, like on a page and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they're doing research now to figure out how that works at the University of Pittsburgh. This is guy Avniel Guman. I think I've got that close.
He's okay, Avniel, no kidding. He's
you
there.
Know, yeah, you know, Av. You know, Av.
That's where he is.
Yeah, he's at the. It's in Pittsburgh.
Track
there
with him. I should catch up.
They say the brain has a visual word area. So what they do to test this out is, I guess if you sign up for this research study, you know, you hear the ad on the radio. We're looking for people to do this. I think you go in and you sit down with Peter Venkman from Ghostbusters because he puts electrodes in your brain.
Oh, that scene.
Right, where, yeah, he's electrocuting the students, right? Okay, so they put electrodes in your brain. They're there to disrupt the normal functioning of the visual word form of your brain. Mm. Now, it says here in the article that it's painless, but there's electrodes in your brain. So they give you a book, and you sit down, and you start reading. And then I guess he hits the button, bzzzt, and they're finding if they electrocute that part of your brain while you're reading, you can't figure out what the word is. Yeah, so this is science, people. There's a guy probably making a lot of money at a university doing this every day.
I recommend that if you are not a reader, you should sign up for this research. You know, there may be compensation, but the people who are avid readers, you don't want to do this because it sounds to me like a Pavlov thing where, you know, every time you pick up a book, you're going to think, pain bad, book bad.
I got halfway through Moby Dick, but I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
No, he says it's painless. They say, and here's what they found, the electrocution to that part of the brain, it didn't change recognition of faces or objects, but it did make it hard for you to differentiate from one word from the other. Science, everybody.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have a related story about reading. The end of nudity has not really affected Playboy, at least not yet.
Have you picked up an issue since they're stopped
being... I can't say that I've ever actually picked up an issue and paid for one. Although there was somebody famous.
Wait, never ever bought a Playboy?
I don't think so. I think I had some look, there's one. I'll take it.
You found dad's. Found dad's collection, right?
I have one of the first ones ever printed in my magazine collection in a box full of bugs.
Wait, you collect magazines?
I've got some
like all magazines or just dirty magazines?
I have some pretty cool Mad magazines and some cool Sports Illustrateds and and
swimsuit edition.
I have I have one of the first Rolling Stone. It was a newspaper at the time. It folded in half, and
it was a. I believe that's a. Is that a broadsheet? No, a full size newspaper.
I've got one with Bob Dylan on the cover. I have another one with Janis Joplin on the cover.
Okay, that's fairly cool. I was going to mock you, but I withdraw my mocking.
Yeah, but I unlike you, I do not have a porn collection. But back to the story, the end of nudity has not affected Playboy yet. About 700,000 people are still reading the magazine, wow. ever since they took Naked Ladies out of there, which is basically the same as where it was before. However, if you want to find the Naked Ladies with Playboy, you go to playboy.com, where 16 million people visit that website per month, which is up from 2 years ago.
All right.
Didn't Hugh just sell his mansion recently?
I know he put it up for sale.
I think it was sold.
Was it sold?
Yeah. I think that did go through. Yeah, he still gets to live there.
Right, that was part of the conditions.
That's a strange condition, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, I own the Playboy Mansion. Want to see Hugh?
Now I just rent.
Hey, Hugh, come on down.
the Hugh Hefner apartment.
Or meet my roommate.
Yeah.
My roommate, Hugh. Yeah, it's a little creepy. He comes down in the middle of the night and goes through the fridge, but, it's bending over trying to find something.
All right, now, we've all seen this problem. We've seen people rage about it, and maybe you've been a victim of it. The company refrigerator and people stealing your food.
Oh, at work.
At work.
You put your sandwich clearly marked.
Yeah.
This is my sandwich or whatever. Yeah.
Somebody just posted a picture on Reddit from a Post-it that one of their coworkers left on her bottle of Coffee Mate in the fridge. Here's what it says. To whomever has been enjoying my coffee creamer all week, surprise, you've been drinking my breast milk. Hope you've enjoyed. Cheers. And then at the bottom it says, P.S., it's organic. No need to worry.
Right. Probably good for you.
Yeah.
It's certainly better than Coffee Mate.
Yeah.
What's that made out of? Like plastic or something.
Now, what's next? That employee who's been drinking the Coffee Mate without permission is going to sue.
Oh, boy.
Right? Sue the employer.
Although, you know what? I do like that flavored coffee creamer. I am addicted to
that.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, which flavor?
I like them all. I mean, the hazelnut, the vanilla nut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like them all. Cinnamon.
Coffee nut.
Yeah.
Coffee nut.
I don't know. I like my coffee black.
Yep.
Never mind. Oh. It's an old thing there.
Yeah. Put your own joke in there.
We saw something in the Huffington Post a couple of months back, and a company that somehow harvested the San Francisco fog and made vodka out of it. A representative from that distillery, in fact, the head distiller is going to join us in just a few. Gonzo, you're a vodka guy, right?
I'm very excited about this.
San Francisco fog. I mean, I don't get it exactly how they're doing this, but we'll find out. In just a few minutes. I am excited about it, too. I want to know about that.
Yeah.
I'm not a vodka guy.
I like vodka.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
What do you drink, Phil? What's your...
I'm more of a whiskey and rye guy, and sometimes I like that Sapphire gin in the blue bottle.
Oh, yeah.
I like that, too. Right. Yeah. That's me. And beer. Plenty of beer.
Who doesn't like beer?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, stick around. We'll find out about this vodka coming up in just moments here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water.
For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the Day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.